boundaries. This is important to people like us too. You'll need to establish boundaries to keep people from running roughshod over stuff in your life that matters to you, but which they won't fully understand. I had to do this on my own long before I learned about Dr. Henry Cloud or Dr. John Townsend, who have since made a career together of writing books for Christians. Their books almost all revolve around the importance of boundaries. They rightly point out that a religious culture often means growing up without proper boundaries in place. Louisa writes,
"More than most around me, I was extreme in not having personal boundaries, had never heard of the term or concept, and I was extreme in living under the fear of man. That is partly why when I did suddenly shock everyone by my leaving the meeting, many could not believe that I had forsaken it all, as I hadn't been anything but compliant."
My own life situation, when I was in my early 20s, was not terribly unusual, especially for a meeting guy, but it needed work before it became workable. I'd been away to university, which meant, most years, being dropped off in Ottawa each Sunday evening, 45 minutes drive from my parents' house, doing school during the week, and getting picked up at the end of the week to go home for the weekend and attend Lord's Day morning meeting with them. Apart from my last year at university, I was living at home on weekends and theoretically going out to the meetings then too, with sporadic attendance at the Ottawa Tuesday and Friday night meetings. I spent May through August living entirely at my parents' house. So by 21, I'd graduated with a bachelor's degree in English literature, then held down full-time but not very lucrative employment the whole while, had managed to score a crappy car, and yet was still living and keeping all my stuff in my little bedroom just like when I was a teenager. I put my university stuff, the little bar fridge, microwave, and toaster oven, in my bedroom at my parents', to try to have boundaries up, to try to feel like I was living the life of an adult. But really, I still struggled with having family running roughshod over my privacy and agency in planning out the course of my life. What I figured out on my own by having a look at what was dysfunctional about my life, Cloud and Townsend clarified for me much later. Many people, and Christians are no exception, have too many people who are all up in their stuff all the time. People who repeatedly intrude, and with whom you've taken no real steps to define what's okay and what's not okay. Cloud and Townsend say all that's just stuff you need to take the time to clearly work out between you, if you want a workable life and any lasting relationship with said people. Because you need room to breathe and space to be yourself. You don't need your elbow jostled while working out your future. You don't need to constantly have the expectations and assumptions of others shoved in your face while you're trying to figure out how to be an adult either. If you're an adult, whether you're in your childhood room or university dorm, that needs to be your place. It's not your place if people, for instance siblings or parents or church people, anyone, are going to negatively comment if you put up a Pink Floyd poster on your wall, if they want you to put up Bible texts or tear off daily scripture calendars in your apartment, or if they're upset that there is a wine bottle or member of the opposite sex in there. It's not your place if they are going to comment on who visits, on your phone calls, church attendance, finances, or sleeping habits. But many adults have this kind of living situation, especially nowadays, not really being treated like adults. Boundaries not really up to keep that stuff out of the life in question. Old habits die hard. My parents believed they should treat me like an adult until I found my own apartment, which I did in my 23rd year, not a moment too soon, but they had trouble with old habits. Old habits like asking me where I was going every time I left the house, worrying I might be seen by a meeting person if I went to the movie theater. Old habits like always asking in advance two or three times if I'd be going out to whatever church event was on, asking me as soon as they got home afterward why I didn't show up if I hadn't, obligating me to meal engagements, visits, and social duties of various kinds, often without asking me first. When you live with or even depend financially upon your parents into adulthood, in most ways you have no real privacy. So, some has to be contrived. It reminds me of a character from a 70s TV show called WKRP in Cincinnati. On WKRP, Les Nessman is a small radio station's newsman. Les feels like he deserves his own office, but he only has a desk in the big room with everyone else's. So what Les does is he takes masking tape and puts lines on the floor around his desk to mark where his walls would be, had he a real office of his own. and he insists that everyone who walks up to talk to him pretend to knock on his door so he can in turn pretend to open it if and when he wants to talk to them. But really, they're just standing right beside him in the same room anyway. It was almost like that with my parents. They did their best, but they had no real idea about not needing to know everything, not speaking for me to others, and about giving me space to make my own mistakes. Because I wasn't being given any space to make any mistakes, despite that being precisely what a young adult needs. What I had to do was gently wean them from this. I had to explain that though they felt they were trying to correct my behavior to be more appropriate, the beam in their own eye was seen in their treating me as if I was still a child, when I wasn't. In their continual trying to point out that they felt I had a speck in my eye. It didn't matter if their suggestions were right or wrong, so much as it mattered that they kept endlessly giving suggestions. It mattered that I was being kept from living my own life. Repeated gentle reminders to them were required, but they paid off eventually, somewhat. Also, a bit of joking worked. So one time, when my mother asked me where I was going when I was leaving the house after 10 p.m., I just said, well, I thought I'd stop at an opium den followed by a Vietnamese brothel and then perhaps later take in a cockfight on the way to the track. She laughed, and my repeatedly doing this really helped her remember to stop this kind of thing. She knew that the next time or two she asked me, she might well get a ridiculous answer. And she did. My answers got ever more esoteric. For many of us, we needed to get to a certain point. Inside ourselves, we needed to move beyond the fear and suspicion about living our own lives that our parents seemed to be unthinkingly pouring into us. It needed to be something we no longer bought into ourselves anymore. We had to leave fear behind. When discussing the correspondence she gets from her parents now that she's no longer attending a Brethren church anymore, Anne notes that it's always loaded with dread and dire predictions, with talk about how our feelings often lead us astray and take us away from God's special path of blessing for us. About being humble and confessing all the recent choices she's, the us goes away at this point, made that clearly aren't according to God's will, and about returning to the fold. I know several people who get parental letters or emails of this kind every month or so into middle age, pleading with them to return to the Lord, to give up their wayward straying, their independent youthful spirit. Anne notes the number of times Satan and led astray and danger seem to crop up in every email. She says,
sometimes I think it's less their religion than a predisposition to anxiety and depression that is cloaked in religious terms.
I know what she means. The more my parents age, the more fear I hear, the more focus on news stories about horrible accidents and tragic obituaries and gossip about people's kids or grandkids messing up their lives. They trusted to our culture to feed them spiritually, to look after their kids and keep them in the faith, to provide spouses for us and care for our children and plan stuff to do socially for all of us. And they seem shocked and confused that very little of this worked out. They're senior citizens now, and they've been sold very short in that whole meeting deal. In fact, they've been cut loose entirely, and that shakes them to their very foundations. So dire predictions and fear seem to be the order of the day, and my sister and I find we have to ignore, shut down, or laugh off a great deal of that stuff. Emergency boundaries. Sometimes, though, boundaries need to be put up against things that are not so much just annoying as they are downright scary. I had to phone the police, for my family, to get a Brethren guy to stop stalking my sister back in the day. Because he was a meeting guy, my father simply couldn't find it in himself to do something like that. What a mess it would make at meeting. It was rude. It was so awkward. The police, however, felt that what the guy was doing was illegal, especially when he broke one of their noses. When the guy phoned and I asked him once again to stop phoning my sister, who was terrified and traumatized, my aunt told me I hadn't been nice to him in that conversation. And Christians are always nice, right? Like Jesus always was. So I should have been nice to him, she decided. There was no thought that my aunt eavesdropping at my house on my private phone conversation wasn't nice either. I was doing what I needed to in order to protect my family. She was placing fear of social awkwardness at meeting above what eventually became a police matter, with repeated police involvement and lifetime confinement of the young man to various psychiatric institutions eventually becoming necessary. I'm an adult now. Getting my own place made a huge difference, but then there was the matter of people at meeting. Whenever my hair started to get slightly long, certainly not to my shoulders or anything, they would put the shame and fear into me. In my mid-20s, I would get busy with my job and not get a haircut for a couple of months, and would feel an odd mix of delight in how long my hair was getting and fear of getting into trouble for such a bold, rebellious move with people like the various Mrs. Hayhoes. Mostly, the longer my hair got, the more was said behind my back and the less said to me about anything at all. There were pointed stares. What happened was every time I buckled and got a haircut, people at church would go out of their way to praise this nice, appropriate Christian behavior, like that was their job. "So nice to see you out at meeting, all trimmed up nice and neat," a Mrs. Hayhoe would say, pointing out that she was relieved that at least I wasn't missing meeting that day, nor was I shaggy-looking anymore, which would certainly have turned lost souls away from the Lord, it being a bad testimony and all. "Zoink, Scoob! Like, shagginess sure was of the devil!" And this stuff didn't stop in the 90s, nor is it only seen in closed or exclusive groups like the one I grew up in. Today I got a message from Ray, who goes to an open brethren group in America. Now, at the time of writing, the really trendy thing for young guys is a very bushy beard and hair that is shaved all around but very long on top, flopped over to one side or straight back. This decade's mullet in waiting. Now, Ray is rocking the heck out of that style this month. His hair on the top of his head is so long it can flop right down nearly to his chin, but it's shaved all around. Normally it is flopped back or to one side, with a bushy beard giving the air of a fashionably startled rooster eating a badger. Today, at breaking of bread, Ray was spending a lot of time bent over redirecting and chasing after his burgeoning brood of toddlers. One could say that Ray's quiver was full, only he's clearly hitting repeated bullseyes with his arrows. But today, Ray's hair kept flopping over his eyes as he leaned forward and tended the kids, so he got a hair elastic he uses to control his little daughter's brethren correct long blonde locks and man-bunned up, made a wee samurai topknot. Well, open brethren or not, bang, Ray got spoken to, immediately, and decided to message me about it. People do this a lot. It's the same old thing. Of course, Ray can do whatever he wants with his hair if he likes. Open brethren aren't under law, of course. No one's going to turn him away from the table just for his hair, probably. But we all know what a hairstyle like that makes him, don't we? And what it shows about his attitude as to being a good example to draw others to Christ. So that's how that works. If Ray wants to speak up in Bible discussions, some people, as mature as high school girls apparently, aren't going to want to sit near him or give eye contact or talk to him or acknowledge his comments. They're very down with the fruit of the Spirit like that, those senior citizens. And the onus is on him rather than on them to explain exactly why he's causing trouble, offending people, indulging himself at the expense of others, selfishly failing to show the Spirit of Jesus or the fruit of the Spirit. Fashion will be no excuse for a lack of submission. Now, the interesting thing about Ray is he's not simply a guy who wants to do whatever the heck he wants because he wants to and be left alone. What he said to me in the message is that what he wants from his assembly is to be held accountable to them more than he is, but for things more important than mere hairstyle, for deeper things, for spiritual things, and that's not happening. Ray wants to have his soul and his spiritual life kept watch on by spiritual people. He wants to be inspired to delve deeper into Christianity and the Bible, wants to be challenged to be less shallow, to know more. He wants to grow, not just be told his trendy hipster hair is offending the old farts. But he can't get the farts in question to take an interest in anything deeper than his due. They're just not looking past it at all. Their spirituality just doesn't go beyond splitting hairs, disrespecters of persons to a man, or so they are coming off to Ray. Meanwhile, he's got to move in the same circles weekly as this guy who just warned him people might be offended. Ray is tempted to shave it off along with the beard, as he put it, whitewashing the walls along with my Pharisee brother. His other choice is taking that pariah place, SH disturber, offense causer, bad testimony, worldly, stench in God's nostrils, someone apt to lead the youth astray. Facebook now indicates that the hair all went and the beard stayed. Sometimes the only way to make this kind of inappropriate meddling stop is to tackle it head on. A juvenile approach is to purposely do whatever you're not supposed to in such a way as to make the point that if you want to do that, you will. One guy I knew had been worrying everyone by not attending Lord's Day morning for weeks. He used to do adolescent things like thank concerned folks for giving him unwanted tear-off Bible calendars, scripture word searches, and gospel pamphlets, but in his own very special way. What he did was he used them as rolling papers to smoke pot with. I know next to nothing of pot smoking, but I'm made to understand that using this kind of paper would be very hard on the throat and would only be done to make a point with. A very big, unsubtle point. But this answered the question of if he dutifully enjoyed the Sunday school scripture searches in question, because he really had enjoyed the heck out of them. Very encouraging they were too, he said, deeply edifying and all. In fact, he was having trouble keeping up, given how many pieces of paper a Mr. Hayhoe was sending him. Because the Mr. Hayhoe wouldn't stop sending these scripture searches for decades. Enclosed new ones in letters reminding you that you hadn't completed the old ones and therefore he worried about your soul's final destination. Said all too many young people who didn't complete their scripture searches had ended up in a lost eternity, in his experience. Begged you to reconsider. Wouldn't stop sending them. Even if you repeatedly wrote and asked him to stop, he would not. No matter where you moved, he got your address. Thought that repeatedly sending you these papers might bring the straying sheep back into the fold. So I guess this guy is using them to roll joints with. Funny, but not very mature. Hard to respect in someone wanting to be treated like a grown-up. The same could equally be said about the pot smoker's behavior, too. How to build your backyard fence. Words are powerful. Broaching subjects is powerful. A more adult approach than carefully chosen defiant behavior is simply to allude in any way to the behavior you want to put up a boundary against. Refer to the elephant in the room in a quiet, dignified manner. Just calmly name drop what you're doing while thinking about something else as if to hint that it's simply a fact now. You're a young woman and you've gotten a nose ring. You know that there is supposed to be awkward silence about it unless someone wants to give you an awkward lecture. So just say something vaguely connected to it. I bought this Bible the same day I got my nose pierced. This is almost an invitation to discuss the matter openly or to let it go. It establishes that you aren't ashamed nor afraid to discuss it, but makes it clear that you would be discussing it as an equal and not a shamed child. Because these things are unspoken about, mostly. The rules are unwritten and unmentioned, and the people reinforcing them and socially punishing rule breakers get a whole lot of mileage out of you know. So make it clear you don't know. You don't know any of that stuff anymore at all. It increasingly sounds like stuff that superficial, superstitious folk are making up as they go along. Notice how the people who intrusively lecture others often feel safer being very careful to not finish a lot of their sentences. Well, piercings are a bit... I'm not sure a Christian should really... Don't you think maybe it would be better if... It's very hard to respond to what is only the first half of a sentence and one that's carefully missing the crucial bit. But lecture mongers do this. They're able to thereby remind you of what's expected of you without fully putting into words what exactly that is, nor what's going to be done to you socially if you don't comply. Because things that are put into actual words can be responded to. Words pin you down and make you commit to a criticism. Finished sentences mean a complete thought has been expressed, and one can then have a long, hard look at that thought, which is something most cultures don't really want to bother with. They just want conformity. No discussion, no deconstruction. But many Christians seemingly want everyone to follow an unexamined path without justifying doing so. They expect you to need to satisfy their expectations simply because they expect you to need to satisfy their expectations. And they aren't willing to even understand their expectations themselves, let alone explain them. Intrusive people will usually only feel comfortable intruding if the act of intruding isn't going to be revealed to be inappropriate. If you want to make them less comfortable intruding, an easy tactic is to simply put into words exactly what it is they're doing. It's important to word this as neutrally as possible, but put into the air, in words, this thing that they're doing in a way they can't miss. This could be done in a number of ways. You could word it as a command or request. Please stop keeping track of and commenting on my church attendance. I don't like it, and I don't feel it's appropriate. Or you could word it as a question. Do you feel it's appropriate and helpful for you to keep track of and comment on my church attendance? How exactly do you feel it is helping? You can even word it as a neutral observation. You sure do keep track of and comment on my church attendance a lot. And you can go preemptive. As a person makes her way over, you can say, "Going to be commenting on my church attendance today, Mrs. Bloomquist?" But you have to say that warmly and with humor, or it's just mean. It really doesn't matter. They all do exactly the same thing. But once you've put into words what is happening, this shines a big awkward spotlight on the inappropriate, awkward action that will otherwise continue to go on forever. To switch metaphors, it kind of puts up that fence for you. And I felt I needed to do this in my 20s. I was, after all, trying to make meeting about God. You know, instead of being 100% about these people and their need for me to respect their Christian group efforts and to have the right hair and pants and jargon. And they weren't letting me do that at all. One would almost think they wanted it to be about them and they're imposing their will upon everyone. So I started getting firm with them whenever they overstepped my boundaries in all those ways that my church culture had always taught me were perfectly normal, but which someone like Curry would have been shocked and outraged by. Because I could discern that the social stuff was interfering with my relationship with God and my trying to give him his proper place in these things. It's all well and good to claim that we don't follow rules, but instead have a relationship with Jesus. But if you then socially shame and punish and ostracize people who break them, tends to belie that claim. So I started getting firm, blunt even, and this brought me some breathing room. Was going to say living room, but decided that was too Hitlerian. Now, it takes very special people to stick to their guns and keep right on being inappropriate despite it being made clear to them that they are intruding in an inappropriate way. You're still going to find people who will do that, though. A common response by a truly dogged intruder is, "I'm just trying to encourage you to attend church." They're always just saying and just trying to do inappropriate things. You can ask them to just knock it off. Obviously, simply letting them know that in reality, you do not feel encouraged by their ineffectual, misguided efforts will help here. If you comment only on what's actually really happening at your end, they can't really disagree and say that no, you do feel encouraged. They can always resort to that old chestnut, "You should feel encouraged. Why wouldn't you feel encouraged? Do you have a guilty conscience?" But if you keep bringing the conversation back to the awkward actual and keeping it out of the purely idealistic and imaginary, this move doesn't work for them either. "I'm just trying to show I care." Do they? Do you feel cared about? Or scolded? Perhaps they could use some frank feedback as to how they're doing at making you feel cared about. Anne has been taking nonviolent communication courses. What she does is, when her mom emails her and goes on about sometimes our feelings can lead us away from the Lord and astray into paths of independence without our quite knowing it, taking roads down which blessing surely cannot follow, Anne reads behind all of this to the parental concern she feels is truly there, and she answers that instead of the surface doubt, suspicion, accusations, or disparaging of her character and life choices. Anne says things more like, "Are you worried for me? Do you want me to know God better? Are you scared I'm not taking a life path that's going to make me happy in the long run?" Stuff that addresses the concern and the relationship, stuff that tempts her parents to express affection rather than just the dread and prophecies of doom, sounds pretty smart.